3, 2, 1.
Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. You're more than welcome to ring in during the show to ask questions or make comments. We'd also like to encourage you to check out our website, towardthelight.org, where you will find an abundance of resources and services centered on near-death studies and support. We are supposed to have Matthew Deleuze on the show today, but we are having trouble getting through to him, and so bear with us, because I am going to try to get through to Matthew. He's a wonderful, wonderful person, and Matthew, if you're hearing this, maybe you could ring the station and give us a phone number again. Anyway, I'm just going to proceed and talk to myself whilst we're waiting to get some news from Matthew. He has written a tremendous book that I would say is a must-read. If I were a university professor, I would say you must read this book. It is called Is It Me for a Moment? Breaking the Serpent's Spell by Matthew Deleuze. He's also from Lancashire, although I don't sound as Lancashire as I used to be since I've been away for a number of years. But he is an abductee who actually went through several abductions. The first one he went through was at age 6, and he was abducted by, brought into a spaceship where he met a beautiful, beautiful lady who told him that he had agreed to help save the planet before he incarnated into this plane. And he said, "Oh, blimey, I'm only 6 years old. What are you talking about?" And she said, "Well, you agreed to this before you were born, and you will be wiser when you are older." She warned him that he was due to have a lot more of these experiences, in other words, abductions, that wouldn't be very pleasant, but that it would help him to catapult him onto a very important path that he has since been on. Now, what's interesting is that he ended up being abducted basically once a week since the age of 6 to the age of 10 or 11. And then he's been doing a lot of research since then. So, again, I wish we could get hold of him. I think we're having trouble with the telephone lines. But he's written a book, as I said, from the first encounter that he had with the beautiful lady. He wrote a book called You Will Be Wiser When You Are Older. When You're Older. And that book actually describes the different abductions that he went through, and then the book that followed that is a book entitled The Stars Are Falling, where he actually did a lot of work to reveal all of the different ways that the serpent cult does control our planet. And this current book is one that it's a really, really wonderful book, and it just is quite a page-turner, where he is discussing the different things that we've been subjected to ever since being in school. And one thing that I found... Okay, we've got a call in, so maybe we're going to have some good luck here. Let's take the call. Who's calling in?
Just me.
Oh, hello. Okay, how are you, Don? This is our wonderful behind-the-scenes man who makes it all possible here on BBS Radio, Don Newsom.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you. I just love the story here because you're talking about a guy who agreed to have, to be abducted over and over and to have unpleasant experiences for his own learning growth. And so that whatever entities were out there actually did this by a prior agreement, even though he may not remember. Now, I've heard of these sorts of things before coming up, and it's quite remarkable to me when people say, you know, I've had truly horrific experiences being abducted, and yet I agreed to it, and I remember that.
Yes, yes, and I just feel that he's so wonderful to have taken this on, and, you know, I would have been terrified, although having said that, I too have been through some of these experiences with the reptilians, so, you know, this is definitely not a hallucination here. Now, I am seeing some emails from him, and I'm hoping that somehow we can get through to him, because he's just really, really special, and I'd love to be able to hear him talk about this in his own words, while he's saying if there's anything he could do. So, Matthew, if you're listening to this, lovey, send an email with your phone number again, and maybe we can try it again, although we rang the same number before and got through, so we are having some technical difficulties. I think these little bugger reptilians don't want this message to get out, really, but too bad for them, because we're going to get it out anyway. Yeah, it was interesting.
Well, I'm going to try them on the spare line and just
okay.
keep trying them, because maybe we just couldn't get through that one time.
Okay. Well, thank you, Don, and
you bet.
we'll just see what we can do here. Matthew is from Burnley, Lancashire, which is east of where I'm from. I'm from Blackpool in Lancashire, and actually on his blog he divulged a lot of very interesting and upsetting information about Blackpool and a lot of developments and things that have gone on there. Basically, one of the things that he's done is he's visited different monuments in different parts of the UK, especially Lancashire, where we're from, and has been able to dig up the real meaning behind these monuments, what they represent, where they come from, and why.
We have them. All right.
Oh, yay! Here we go. This is great news. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
Hey, there you are. Okay, everybody, clap your hands, because we've got Matthew. We can hear it all from the horse's mouth now. God love you, lad. This is great. I was just saying on the air a few minutes ago, I think the reptilians are trying to keep us from talking because they know that you've got some really good stuff to say. But anyway...
I'm glad you managed to...
We've been persistent here. So anyway, I've been telling our listeners that we've got your new book out, which is really tremendous. Is it me for a moment? So go ahead, lad, I've done enough talking. Why don't you just go ahead and start sharing with us a little bit about what you're doing. Now, I did share a little bit of history about your abductions and this sort of thing, so carry on, lovey.
Jumping right in, I've just finished a book called Is It Me for the Moment, where I try to explain things in a straightforward manner on how I believe that the human race is basically hypnotized, and they're living a life, but it's not really their life. They're living a false life. It's not an easy thing to get across to people, because the first reaction of an average Joe on the street is, how can we all be hypnotized? You know, I'm not hypnotized. I'm living the life as I choose. But the more I've researched into these things, I find out that we don't live a life of our choice. We're living a life that somebody else wants to live.
Yes.
Now, whether I have a direction and a journey while I'm living this life to point these things out, I don't know. All I know is I've got into a position now where I'm writing stuff that's even amazing me. I'm learning myself. It's not as though I'm a clever bloke and I know everything and this is what's happening in the world. I'm learning these things myself, and I'm just passing them on. As you mentioned, I've been on your show before, and I mentioned things in my childhood, bringing up subjects like alien abduction and things like that. It's not an easy thing to get across. But I think everything that I've been writing about recently is related directly to the experiences in my childhood. And what's happening to me now over the last 7 or 8 years was basically planned and thought up in my childhood. And I had information implanted in me as a child to come out to me later in life. I mentioned many things in this new book I've wrote. Different ways in which I believe we're hypnotized. And so many different things. I can't tell them all in 1 minute. But basically, what I'd like to talk about tonight and before I leave is the festivals, the pop festivals. And other festivals that we all take part in some way or other. I know we all don't go raving at a pop concert and this hour, but we do join in other sorts of festivals. Christmas, Easter, New Year's Eve, all these sort of things are basically festivals in the cell. Just for a moment, I'd like to talk about mention the pop festival, because there seems to be a lot going on at the moment, especially in the UK. We seem to be bombarded with festivals every week. The major one, the most famous one in England, is Glastonbury.
Right.
It's a famous yearly festival that takes place at the summer solstice. It takes place in a place where they basically build a giant pyramid stage. You see, the stage is actually a massive pyramid that's been constructed for this festival. What I'm trying to suggest to people is that when the people attend these festivals, they're actually carrying out a ritual. I know that may sound strange to some people. I can be carrying out a ritual at a pop concert. But if you think about it, all we've got is a mass of people attending a certain location and basically carrying out a massive ritual, bigger than any church has every Sunday. Lots of people attend places like Glastonbury thinking to themselves that they're just attending to listen to music and enjoy themselves. But what I'm trying to suggest is there's more to it than that. There's a lot more to it than that. But you've got to start to think, when people attend these festivals, what's actually happening. What's actually going on in the body and mind when people are at these festivals?
Right. Summer solstice is really significant in itself, because that's a major, that's sort of like the zenith, as it were, of the sunlight in the middle of the year. It seems to me that in itself should be a dead giveaway that this is a major, major ritual. So go ahead, lad. This is very interesting. I'm pleased you're pointing this out.
When these people get together, they're actually letting off emotions. If any of your listeners have actually been to a pop festival, they'll know that when they get there, the crowd are all singing and dancing together, and they're jumping up and down and chanting along with whatever song is going on at the time. It's a major, major emotional event. It's not just like you're sat at home listening to a radio. You're actually physically, mentally, totally involved in it, and it's very emotional. It's a very spiritual experience. Now, what I'm trying to suggest is that the powers that be, the secret rulers of this world, have arranged for certain concerts to go ahead, because they somehow get some power from it. They somehow extract power from the masses that attend them, as though somebody was collecting electricity. Or collecting air in the field and just storing it up. I'm just asking if it's possible that the human being can create an energy within the cell, a sort of invisible spiritual energy, and it's released when the emotions of the person or people involved are excited or pumped up or you know, this sort of thing. And if it is, then it's possible that the energies are created through this way. Where does the energy go? If you're a Christian or a Muslim or whatever religion you're into, and you go into a church or a synagogue or a mosque or whatever, and you go in there, and you get on your knees and you pray, and what are you praying to? You're praying to a God, whatever God you believe in. And I believe that the festival, like Glastonbury, is something similar. The people that are attending the actual Glastonbury Festival and other festivals are actually doing a similar thing that people do when they attend church. They're actually worshipping their heroes or idols on the stage.
Yes.
And does that make sense to you, Julia?
Oh, absolutely it does. I've seen it because energetically, you feel the same thing. You know, people feel very high. They feel very connected to one another and everything else that's going on around them. And in some ways, I think it might even be more spiritually powerful than going to a church. Definitely. Because there's all the music involved and people are really, really excited. So this makes perfect sense. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. When these people are actually in a church or a synagogue or whatever, I'm not speaking on any particular religion, any of them, and they go in, there's quite a few symbolism in the church or whatever religion they have, or you know, I'm talking as because I had a Christian upbringing, I can only basically mention a Christian church. You go in there, there's an altar, there's stained glass windows, symbolism of Jesus or whatever, and a cross on the altar. And basically, people get on their knees in the church, and they give energy in that building, in the church. And on a par at Glastonbury, it's exactly the same thing. But what the people that go to Glastonbury and places like that don't realise is they believe that they're just there worshipping an idol on stage, whether pop group or rock band they love, they go to see. And basically just worshipping without thinking of any religion or whatever. Now, it came to me a few years ago that if the symbolism used at Glastonbury is on a par with what symbolism is used in any religious church, then basically what you've got at Glastonbury is one massive church. And what the people are doing when they go to these festivals, when they're worshipping their idols on stage, they're actually worshipping the symbolism that's there at Glastonbury. And as I've mentioned, it's a massive pyramid. There's a massive pyramid stage at Glastonbury, and all the top bands, all the major bands that get the respect of the visitors, basically playing on a pyramid. So all the people that's paid to go and possibly watch their idols on stage, if you can picture the scene, they're all stood in front of a massive pyramid, celebrating and worshipping it. And what I'm trying to point out to your listeners is it possible that while these people are dancing around and worshipping their idols on the pyramid, they're actually giving spiritual powers to the symbolism there, which is basically a pyramid, the same as they would in a church, giving it to the altar and the cross and whatever.
Right.
And if so, then surely there's something not quite right, because these things are happening all over the place. You know?
Oh, in a huge way.
The main one that happened a few years ago, if you start going a bit deeper, the Live 8 thing. I don't keep mentioning the Live 8 thing because I think it was a major event.
Oh, but yes, Live 8, yes.
Live 8 took place in many, many symbolic locations around the world.
Mm.
You know, Paris and London, Rome at the Circus Maximus, which is a very symbolic place. And what I found out when I researched the Live 8 concerts was on a par with Glastonbury. They were all in very symbolic areas that had histories linked to sun worship, the ancient sun worship in ancient Egypt was worshipping all the sun and other sun gods. And when I looked into it then, I thought to myself, why are all these places in Live 8 actually taking place in symbolic places that's linked to ancient symbolism? Obviously, I haven't got time to go through all the symbolism in each separate place, but if you take the concert in Rome in Live 8, the Circus Maximus, that was a place of worshipping the sun and the goddess Diana and all these different sun and moon deities. And things start to become too coincidental. I'll remind you listeners that the Live 8 concerts were free. It wasn't a case of making money. The major aim of the Live 8 concerts was to get as many people to these symbolic places at the same time and get them to enjoy themselves and celebrate and worship and admire the artists on the stages that they built. But then the question comes again, why did they want all these people enjoying themselves on these locations? They weren't getting charged for it, remember, it were all free. There must be another reason for it, you know. But we were told, of Sir Bob Geldof, that it was to make people aware of the people that's starving in Africa. That was the excuse for holding these concerts, these Live 8 concerts around the world in these symbolic places. And when you think about it, it's a joke of an excuse for having a concert to make people aware of somebody starving, or the Africans are starving in Africa, so we'll have a massive party all around the world and down to sell silly eating and drinking. It doesn't add up, it doesn't make sense, but the masses just took it as yeah, okay, then we're having a party, because the Sir Bob says it's okay, we're going to make people aware of starving people, so we'll have all these parties on non-symbolic locations around the globe that were coincidentally all linked to sun gods and other deities. It just doesn't make sense to me, and the research I've been going through indicates to me that somehow energy is being extracted from human beings at these places, and it feeds some other force. And the energy that comes out of the human beings while they're at these places somehow feeds a force in another dimension. I know that sounds totally over the top for some of you for listeners to check in. But if you really stand back and just think about what's actually going on during these festivals, and then think to yourself why they are going ahead, then you'll come to the conclusion that it's not just a case of somebody making money out of it, obviously because the Live 8 concerts were free. There's more to it. Basically, I cannot see the world government the European government, the American government, the English government, arranging for free festivals to go ahead about the starving people in Africa, just basically because they don't do things like that. There must be an ulterior motive. And I've come to the conclusion a long time ago that when people like the G8 leaders are allowing these things to go ahead, then obviously, from my point of view, there's something more to it. With the case of the Live 8 concerts, I cannot see that the G8 people, the presidents of the world, the Tony Blairs of this world and the Bushes of this world, that's created poverty and created starving Africans, would basically allow concerts to go ahead on the belief that we're helping the starving by having them. It's obvious to me that the concerts did have another reason for them to go ahead. There was another reason for them taking place. And the more and more and more and more I've looked into it, I've come to the conclusion that the leaders of this world want masses of people congregating together where they want them congregated together. So when these things happen, there must be some sort of spiritual reason for it. You know, it's not just a case of oh, what a farce, let's all dance around and then go home. There is another reason. And as I said about the symbolism within the churches, the symbolism being shown at these concerts is just exactly the same thing. And what I believe is happening, Juliet, is that when people are getting to these concerts, they're being flashed with, they're being presented with symbolism they don't understand, both on the stage, off the stage, and their actual location, and they're actually still celebrating and showing respect to this symbolism that's all around them, but they don't understand the symbolism that's being presented to them. They don't understand that Circus Maximus was once a massive some temple. They don't realise that. And what you're actually doing, these people, when you go into these concerts, is they're actually celebrating and expressing emotions, creating what I call spiritual energy, actually on the location of the ancient sun temples, which I believe, in a way, is they're actually carrying out a worship ritual on the ancient location. So when they do this, it's a collection of a spiritual energy, and as I've tried to explain, somehow it's being harnessed and it's been collected, and then I think it's being used against us. I think when people giving away their spiritual energy on these locations, they're actually enslaving themselves. They're actually giving power to a force that will force that will actually grab that energy off us and twist it around and use it against us. We're actually, what I believe we're doing, we're actually giving permission to a force in another dimension, the actual power to control and rule over us, and we're actually giving them permission to do that. I know it's, I've made a big deal getting that across, but I hope I've made it basically clear what I'm trying to say. Have I done that, Juliet?
Well, that makes a lot of sense, and actually, Matthew, there's been a lot of talk lately about this kind of stuff. I know Peggy Kane and I were talking about it, and indeed David Icke and I have been talking about it. This kind of information, thank goodness, is starting to spread around a little bit. How the reptilians, and sometimes people would just call them the reps, how they actually do steal our energy when we're not only participating in these events, but just in our daily lives, you know, just as a matter of course, they're constantly doing this to us. And, you know, sometimes I go through periods where I'm feeling unscathed, and then there are other times where I feel like they're bombarding me. And I've been feeling it a bit lately, in fact, that they really do have a way of tapping in and usurping our energy. And you're so right about this, because I've seen it and I felt it. Furthermore, I have got a background in the music industry, and I have seen how nasty it is from the inside out. It is very, very rigged. And I really appreciate so much that you pointed out this stuff with Bob Geldof, for example, because if he were just some so-called nobody, he wouldn't have been able to pull all these strings and pull this stuff off. And, you know, to be quite frank, and you pointed this out too,
according to Mr. Geldof himself and his website and the Live 8 website, he arranged this worldwide concert from his mobile phone. Apparently, he just got on his mobile phone to his friend. This is the official version of events for Live 8. I'm not making it up. Apparently, he claimed that he arranged everything just by making a few phone calls. Now, to anybody with the slightest bit of intelligence, has got to realise that one person, a so-called anti-establishment person, is fighting for people that are starving, allegedly is fighting for people that are starving, can arrange all this in a matter of... It took him 5 weeks to arrange all this, according to the official website, and all he did was ring all his friends up. Now, to organise one festival in one town takes a hell of a lot more time than that.
Oh, it took us 3 months. It took us three months to produce something, yeah.
And when you think about it, it was worldwide. It was in every country that have links to the symbolism involving ancient sun gods and the modern day Freemasons. Off the top of my head, I've forgotten where it was held in America. I think it was the Philadelphia Museum, the Museum of Art in America. The Live Aid concert was held there, and the actual Philadelphia Museum of Art is a building that's built exactly the same as the ancient Roman Greek temples. Franklin Parkway, I think it's called. Obviously, I've never been to Philadelphia. I'm going off information I've seen on the internet. Now, the actual area in America where it was held is reeking of Freemasonry and linked to the Knights Templar. As I said, the actual Museum of Art in Philadelphia is actually a replica of an ancient Roman temple.
Yes.
So you've got the same situation. You've got the same situation going on in America. Even though it's a pretty modern country, America, it's been the Freemasons have built buildings there. It's replicas of temples from Rome and Greece and ancient Greece. And going back to ancient Egypt, if you're going to Washington and things like that. So what you've got when Live 8 took place in America, you've got all these people celebrating at the Franklin Parkway, around the Museum of Art, in the park there. So basically, you've got all these people releasing spiritual energy outside an ancient Roman temple. It's just exactly the same that they used to do thousands of years ago when they used to hold gladiator contests and all this. They used to have entertainment on ancient ritual sites. In front of some god obelisks and stuff like this. So what we had with the Live 8 was a worldwide thing that was basically the same as the ancient Romans used to do. entertainment, letting off spiritual energy on certain places. I'm hoping I'm getting making sense to people out there that even in a modern country like America, we can create the situation where people are turning up and letting off energy where they put replicas of ancient temples. Yeah?
You know, you make a very important point in your book. I remember you asked the question, after someone has been to one of these events, you raise the point, don't you feel kind of tired and exhausted after such an event? And that's a really, really good point. You don't feel energized or empowered. You start to actually feel exhausted. It seems that I remember you asking that question, which is a really, really good point, that people's energy is
anybody that goes to these festivals or whatever. I mean, I began my research into this exactly 3 years ago this weekend, and I went to a tiny festival, the Festival of Light and Water in Morecambe, Lancashire. And it was just a little festival taking place on the promenade in a little scruffy little town called Morecambe. I think you know where I mean, Julie.
Oh, yeah.
You know the area yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And all I did that weekend was basically go on the promenade and attend a tiny festival, just one stage, 500 people at the most. But the situation was just the same, even though there was only 500 people there. I felt I was taking part in a ritual, and because the symbolism around me at the time, the symbolism around me at Morecambe was, I know this is going to sound daft to some of your listeners, was a Ferris wheel. But when you can imagine a stage that's full of lights and speakers and music bumping away, and behind the stage was a massive Ferris wheel because it was at the seaside.
Exactly.
And all that was lit up on this Ferris wheel was the A-frame of the Ferris wheel that took the shape of a pyramid, and the actual circle of the Ferris wheel took on a golden, they lit it up golden like the sun. And it sounds daft, but that is ancient Egyptian sun god symbolism, because it represents the pyramid represents the shape of a pyramid, and the circle of the Ferris wheel represented the sun. And in ancient Egypt, what they did to symbolism to represent the sun gods was a mound of earth rising up and the sun disk shining down on it. And so basically when I entered this little tiny festival on Morecambe Front, I was literally applauding not only the stage with the artists on, but I was applauding the Ferris wheel that was behind the stage, which was lit up. So, in reality, I was literally taking part and applauding sun god symbolism. Even though I was only on a 5 cent level, I was only watching artists and applauding them on the stage. When I walked away from that festival, and I'm 50 year old, I'm knocking on 50 year old, I was prancing around like a 20 year old, and I felt exhausted. All I've done is gone and watched. I came away, and that's what started me on my direction I've been on for the last 3 years with pop music and festivals. Because I knew, as soon as I saw that Ferris wheel, that there was something going on covertly at that little festival of fire and water. And I felt, I walked away from it knowing full well that I had taken part in something I didn't really want to take part in.
Right.
I'd been conned. I'd been attracted to the symbolism because of the artists that were playing. I'd gone and attended it, and I'd clapped and applauded and whistled and this and the other. But when I walked away from it, I knew something inside me, a power that I can't explain to you, something was screaming at me, take this in, learn from it, research it, speak about it, write about it. This is what is going on, you know, this is going on all over. This is just a very small example you'll learn and you'll pick up more things and have it gone. And then 3 years down the line, I am a lot wiser about what's actually going on. I know I'm not the best speaker to get it out speaking. I can write down a lot better than I can speak. But I know that there is something very wicked going on at these festivals. It's not a case of people going to enjoy themselves. They're being attracted to these locations. They're being presented with symbolism they don't understand, and they're applauding it and worshipping it. And it's having a massive effect on the mass consciousness of the human race. It sounds weird, but it's not weird. It's a wicked, nasty thing that I believe is affecting not just a few people. It's affecting all the world, and it needs a lot of people to just actually look at it. I mean, if you want to look at it and then laugh about it and think, oh no, it can't be happening, fair enough. But all I'm asking people to do is just actually look at it, even for 5 minutes. Just have a look at Glastonbury. Have a look at the stage. Have a look at other festivals. Have a look at Live Aid. Think about all these people getting together and what they're actually being conned into worshipping. You know, I'm not saying people are all attending festivals and carrying out satanic bloody rituals or whatever on purpose. No, I'm not saying that. What I'm suggesting is that people are being attracted to these places and they're being exploited to give away energy we can't see, invisible spiritual energy. And we're doing it during the summer months, every single week. It's happening every week. It's not just a one-off. And with stuff like Live Aid, it's going on all over the world, Julia, all over the world.
Oh, absolutely. And even on a small scale, that's why I sent you the email recently about an event I went to here in Rhode Island, USA. In Providence, this is the smallest state in America, and they recently, well, actually, it goes on throughout the summer, I believe. It's called Water Fire, and what they do is that they create these bonfires all along the river here, and I think it's called Blackstone River, but I can't recall the name of it for sure. And they simultaneously play beautiful music whilst these fires are kept burning, and they're kept burning until about midnight. And even though it was beautiful, and indeed it's mesmerizing, I'm not going to lie about that, I was feeling really, really solemn, and I was aware that there's something amiss here, and especially when you think of all the very big moneyed people who are supporting this. It's so Illuminati, it's ridiculous, it's very obvious, it glares you in the face. So, this happens on a very small scale as well as on a very big scale, what you're talking about, and these entities that are lower fourth dimensional entities are actually stealing our energy, and we just need to be aware of that. We've only got a couple of minutes, believe it or not, because of all of the mishaps trying to get hold of you, Lovie, but I want our listeners to know your blog website, because you've got wonderful photographs and articles about all of this on your blog. It's http://Matthew-Deleuze.blogspot.com. Now you've got a website that you're working on right now. Is that correct? It's going to be up sometime soon.
Well, we've had a few problems. I'm very computer illiterate. I have to rely on other people to help me do these things. We may have one up and running very soon. We just have so many problems trying to get it together. It will be MatthewDeleuze.co.uk. It's up now, but it's directing people to my blog. www.MatthewDeleuze.co.uk.
Okay.
People can go on to that. It'll just at the moment it'll send them to the blog anyway.
To the blog. Okay.
It's not online.
And of course, there's links to your blog on my website as well, because I really love what you're doing, Ryan. You're doing such tremendous work. And again, I think the more that this information is circulating and even coming from all of these independent sources, it's becoming very clear that something's amiss, and we're going to have you back because this hour just flew by with all the mishaps, and you're headed to Brazil here shortly. And
I'm off to Brazil next Thursday. I am a guest. I am not. I am. The phone's to fly to Brazil at all. I have been invited to go as a guest next Thursday. I've taken up the offer to investigate the ayahuasca plant.
Wow.
I've been asked to do that. That should be interesting, but I'm still working on the festival, and the research is taking me in all directions. As I mentioned, I will carry on writing about it as much as I can, as long as I can, because I think it's very important. It's a very important aspect of the what's known as the reptilian agenda. People need to, in my opinion, need to grasp the rituals that's going on right under our noses, and we don't notice. It's going on everywhere under our nose, and we just don't connect to it. We don't understand.
Well, hopefully soon we'll be understanding this more and more. And I so appreciate you coming on, Lovey. Well, we are at the end of this transmission of Towards the Light. I hate to say it, but we'll have you come back on.
Okay.
Maybe we can have you back on in November when you're well back from your trip. We can learn about that. You've been listening to Towards the Light, leading back to the source. And despite the difficulties, we were able to get a wonderful guest, Matthew Deleuze, on here, doing tremendous work at exposing the serpent cult. And I want to remind you that it is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. We will talk to you next week on another transmission of Toward the Light. Blessings and light to all of you. And thank you again, Matthew. It's been wonderful having you.
Thank you very much, Juliet.